Accession number 18642, Reel 3.
Very efficient. He can be utterly ruthless, and he's got charm. He's General Templar. And he said, right. And I didn't know, he asked me a few more cross questions. I was cross questioned for a fortnight in the War Office about this. But what I hadn't realized, I'd given my recommendations, and then shortly afterwards I was called, and I went away, and I called to see. I took 6 months. And I, in doing so, I went out with patrols of the infantry, the Gurkhas, the Malay regiment, the police, the air, the navy, and so on. And I found out that one of the main reasons was that an awful lot of the expertise of the war, 39-45 war, had gone with the officers and men. The people who fought and conquered in Burma were mostly national servicemen or territorial army. And what they've got instead now, I'm not really criticizing them, it isn't their own fault, but were a mass of people who'd been captured, both in Dunkirk and in Singapore and elsewhere. And they were handicapped, but they'd been promoted whilst they were prisoners of war. So the chap who's captain had become a major, the chap who's major had become a colonel, without doing anything and without knowing anything more about war. They were very anxious to do well. What they remembered was about officers' messes and this and the other, right, and parade grounds. And they had no idea of how to do it. They said the jungle was impenetrable. Nobody can stay in the jungle for more than a week. And I had to break down all over again, like I'd done so in Burma, the inhibitions which people had got. They didn't understand anything about air or anything else of nature. And so one of the main jobs of the SAS was to, which I was going to say, I went out to these patrols. I can give some examples. Went out with the KY Lai, very good company commander. He was what you might call a ranker, hadn't been through Sandhurst, and very keen. And we found a big bandit base camp, and we managed to get the bandits on the run, and we put down ambush points, and we were just starting to get results. We'd been in for 3 weeks when the company commander said, I've got to go back. I said, why? Here's my orders. I said, what do you mean, your orders? And he said, there it is. He said, there's going to be a mess guest night on Thursday. I expect all my officers to attend without fail, no excuse. And so we had to stop the operation for this. And I reported to General Harding, and he actually blew his top. He was a very good fighting soldier. And then another one, these are the bad points, went out with the guards. Again, they were big men, very keen, very good company commander, but they just hacked their way through the jungle. Mm. They took a bearing and went absolutely dead straight. Yeah. And they're sort of making use of the ridges and the animal tracks and the walking down streams and so on. And they took a day to go for an hour. Go for 1 mile. And at the end of it, we went into bivouac, and I tried to get them to go out in small patrols, which they did, and so on. I always reported back to the colonel, and he was very attentive, and I said, look, I think instead of going around in companies, 100 men, you haven't a chance of meeting the guerrillas. It is like you haven't a chance of seeing any wild animals, that number. But however careful they are, you make a tremendous noise. Mm. And I said that the answer is to go around in patrols of about 14, form a patrol base, and then go out in patrols of about 3 or 4. And I said, you'll get results like that. You get casualties, but you get results like that. And he said, we exploded. And he said, my regiment was formed to fight in Europe. And I'm not going to alter the whole organization and training just to trace a lot of bare-ass niggers around Southeast Asia. And I was getting worn out, and I saw a number of cases like this. The Air Force, I went to see Harding, and Harding immediately gave a Western Rocket rocket. I sent for it. The Air Force said, too many of your requests, this is later on, for air supply and air support are coming in on weekends. That is the only time my pilots have time to get off. Could you please try and concentrate on having them during weekdays?
Going right back to the beginning, very briefly, yeah. the Finnish ski expedition, what was that operation called? Can you remember?
The ski operation?
Where you tried to take the Swedish iron
ore. Oh, I don't think it had a name.
Right.
It probably did, but I never knew it. I reached the rank of sergeant.
Right.
And you don't see very much from that. But anyway, I'll just go.
Yeah,
sorry, I may be spending
yes.
a bit too long.
Isn't
but the main thing was this, that I had been sent down there as the basis of this report.
Yeah.
And then, to my surprise, the report by General Rowell had been read and fully examined, and they said, yes, right, reform. We call this local name SAS. And I tried to suggest some name like South Pacific Rangers, and there was a chief of staff who'd been in the Indian Army, and he said, no, I think Scouts is the best name, like the Tochi Scouts and the Northwest Frontier and so on like that. And so they were called the Scouts. I didn't want them to call the Scouts because the Scouts, by that time, had got a bad sort of boyish name, you know, in England. But we were called the Malayan Scouts, SAS Regiment. And I went around and recruited officers and men, and then there were a lot of restrictions were put on it. I wasn't, there was no, the officer could, you know, a battalion commander could refuse anybody he wanted to. And some of them played, others just sent their boxing teams and things like that to me. And the result is, I went on Wingate's idea that, as he said, anybody can fight with brilliant volunteers, but the difficulty is to fight with the ordinary soldier, ordinary unit. And so my main object was to retrain these people, mainly to give them initiative and to take away all those, the discipline which they'd had beforehand. Because I found, as you'll see in one of these letters here, especially to the infantry, saying that the thing I had most great difficulty was finding infantrymen who were prepared to fight on their own, off their own bat.
Yeah.
Read this, but I got a letter in here by my G1.
Mm-hmm.
After I'd gone, there was some row in Norway, so this chap said. And then he, this is all I know about it, is what he wrote here. We have to find it, I'm afraid. It's Esmond Baring.
Yeah, I'll
and
it, yeah.
This, my second in command had taken over. Now, he.
The way he explained to me, it was that the local police were very hostile, because a lot of them have been collaborators.
Yeah.
Is this, would this be reasonable in your experience in Norway?
Well, we were brought in, certainly the origins of this, we were brought in to hold the fort. See, the Norway was split up into three. There were the people who'd come out, mostly a lot of the naval people, and including the king, and come to Britain. They had practically every ship sunk under them, but they were one reason why we went there. We got 4 million tons of shipping from Norway, you see, which is more than any number of divisions. A second lot had escaped to Sweden in large numbers, and the Swedish, just to keep them in order and everything, formed battalions and divisions out of them to reoccupy Norway if the Germans left to it until, because Norway used to be part of Sweden. And I think they didn't think it had any imperial ideas, but the main idea was to organize the place. And then the third lot were the Maquis, or they got a different name there, who had fought against the Germans, helped by us. And they weren't nearly as many of them as they made out, but they were worth supporting, and they thought that they should take over. A lot of them were communist, you see, or communist inclined. And so the King of Norway says, I want a division to come in and occupy all these places, otherwise to keep the peace until we get organized, or my government gets organized, and we have a general election, and so on. And the whole of the airborne division was sent in, and the SAS were first of all given the job at Kristiansand, and we did it so well that we were promoted and given Bergen. And Bergen really suited us, because Bergen was a bit of a ornery, it had been a Hanseatic League state, and rather independent of Oslo. And the SAS were independent of the first airborne division to a certain extent. And I played it, and I allowed the people to, the SAS to do it, and I played it with a loose rein, you see. And I think we got on very well. We had masses of Russians there, masses of Germans there, and I think we were doing very well, but somebody tried to, I don't know whether it was my second chap, my second one, his name is it, tried to rationalize it. And this didn't suit the situation at all. And there were some riots. But they were, we dealt with them. It was a good, sort of good fellowship idea, you know, trying to be like the police. But if you started to sort of deal with them like infantry battalion of the old sort and do this and the other, you would get into trouble. And I think this is what they did in my absence. But I was in, hospital, in the Royal Masonic Hospital at the time, and I didn't know much of what was going on there until I got this letter, I don't remember receiving it, from Esmond Baring, in which he says there's been a riot or something like that, and then he treats it fairly cheerfully.
I'd better